Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I think there's this illusion, like, and it's kind of perpetuated by social media. Like, people, they see the end result, but they don't see what it took to get there, or they don't see that this feed is curated to show you what you, whatever you see doesn't tell 100% of the story. And there's this sense of, like, you want something, it has to be immediate. And if it doesn't come quick enough, then it's not going to happen. It's like, okay, I told myself that I was going to quit my job. It took me 2 years to quit that job. I said to myself that I was going to do a residency. I had to apply to that residency twice and be accept the email that says you're an alternate and the feedback that your portfolio is not strong enough, and then say a year later, okay, I have a year to build my portfolio and then I'm going to get it this time. So it's like just being patient and not falling victim to this sense that, like, everything's going to happen right when you want it and just wait for it to happen. But you got to keep trying in the meantime.
I'm so happy to welcome two artist mothers to the podcast today to talk about their friendship, a recent residency experience they had, and their lives and work. Sashi Rome is a painter, a muralist, and a mixed media artist. Her work seeks to change the social history behind how and who is captured and immortalized through portraiture. A current series is an ongoing attempt to deliver Black portraiture in a way that is separated from color, separated from societal norms and expectations of beauty. She is the mother to two kids. And Chloe Alexander is an artist and printmaker working in Atlanta, Georgia. She graduated from Georgia State University with a degree in printmaking in 2010, and her work focuses on laying various printmaking techniques to create unique one-of-a-kind drawings and varied print editions. She was recently awarded a 2020 to 2022 residency with the Creatives Projects in Atlanta and also works as a drawing and fashion design and illustration instructor on the high school level. Chloe lives with her husband, two children, and her furry companions. Both Sashi and Chloe live in Atlanta, so we'll hear a bit from them about the art scene and their community there. Thank you both for taking the time to share in conversation with me today. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, I'm glad you let us have a time.
Thanks for having us.
Of course, I'm so excited. Okay, so love to start just by giving us an entry point back to your childhood, maybe sharing something, you know, that you remember that was maybe your first moment where you knew you were interested in art, or if you knew that you always wanted to be an artist, or maybe it wasn't something you thought about. Just kind of want to hear about that beginning stage. Chloe, can you start?
Well, I always tell people my introduction to art was a result of boredom. My parents were religious and conservative, which if anybody who knows me is probably shocked to hear that. Not so much anymore, but growing up, absolutely yes. So my childhood was very isolated. And to fill time, because I was the youngest of five siblings, and my closest sibling is like 7 years older than me.
Oh, wow.
7 to 15 years older. To fill my time, I did lots of creative things. Like, I would cut up magazines and newspapers and make collages. I would sew things. I would draw things like most kids do. You know, I would draw cartoon characters or storybook characters, try to imitate what I saw. And my parents kind of fostered that because I think they were aware that I was in a house full of children, but also alone because of that big age gap. And my older siblings would drag me everywhere, but it was like a chore for them. And so, you know, art was like the thing that I filled my time with. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, my parents were very, they were very good about exposing me to worldly things. They took me to the symphony. They took me to museums when we would go out of town. Like most people, they take their kids to the amusement park, which they did that too. But we would also engage in lots of cultural things. Mm. Like I distinctly remember that, which helped instill an appreciation for the arts in general. You know, the ballet, the opera. To this day, I listen to music and my playlist sounds like it belongs to like 10 different people because of those experiences. And so it was definitely something that was around, but kind of instilled in me because I just needed something to do.
Yeah. I love that. I love that idea of like kind of utilizing, you know, your time when your older siblings weren't really around and filling that with art and, you know, letting that be the thing that sort of, I don't know, you could channel some of that boredom, as you said, into. Sashi, what about you? How is like your childhood and your relationship with art connected?
It's such an interesting thing because it's the same but different. Because it was boredom, but my mom has two sets of twins. We are 13 months apart and she worked all the time.
Wow.
And to be quite frank, there really was not enough money to go around. So you had to stay in the house and watch each other and just stay safe. And so Saturday morning was like my highlight because that was PBS, public broadcast, had Bob Ross. And I always have gotten up really early in the morning. So I would get up and it was like this whole series of things. There was this guy that did the draw, draw, draw. And he would draw these imaginary worlds with a pen. And it was just like magic to me. And then Bob would get in there with his palette knife and his whipping with the brush and stuff. And it'd just be like, boom, magic. There's a tree. There's some friends. There's some bushes. It's a barn. It's a waterfall. Oh, my God. He made whole worlds. And it was so fascinating. I was like, I really want to be that type of magician because I thought it was magic.
Meanwhile,
I'm sitting at home. There's nothing to do. We didn't have any money for a bunch of like random things to play with. So popsicles were like, okay, you're done with the stick. Let me get that. I need the sticks.
Yep.
And then I would unravel like string from fabric and stuff and use that. And I was the queen of paper dolls. And my bookshelf to me was a dollhouse because each little shelf had its own little set that I would make out of the popsicles and the little paper stuff. So I entertained myself because there was nothing else to do. We couldn't go out. Like, it was like, no, stay inside, lock the door, answer the phone when I call.
Yep.
And, you know, stay away from the window. So I didn't get out to do things culturally. So art was just my own form of entertainment and the thing that was accessible. And as far as doing opera and going out, PBS delivered. I'll be honest. Whatever showed up.
Thank God for PBS.
Thank God, because to this day, I still will go and see, okay, what's PBS got on that's interesting? And it gave you this cultural outlet and window that I couldn't physically go to. So, yeah. Thanks, PBS.
Yeah, I mean, I still browse PBS all the time. I watch, you know, Art 21 videos and all kinds of good stuff on there. I love that. And Bob Ross.
Never would have believed I could be an artist, though. That's like a whole different thought process. It was just...
Yeah, it was more like you were inspired by it, but then we'll come back to that conversation about career. Like, how could you make a career about it? So first, before we get sort of down that path, I want to have both of you describe what your work looks like and share a little bit about your process. So, Sashi, can you start for us?
So I used to paint what I consider pretty girls in abstract or chaotic backgrounds, beautiful Black women, but there was a shift in my work. I mean, there's a long litany of things that I could talk about that led to that shift, but ultimately, currently, I'm working on abstracted figures that I believe are my ancestors, people that have passed that journey back through me, and I deliver them into this new space and presence. They're all abstractions of a person, but what I consider to be the essence and presence that would have been there, like what's left over after you pass. So it's a very interesting journey that I would have never foreseen as the little PBS. it's a whole different direction, but I really have enjoyed the journey of going into art life, so to speak. I mean, completely unexpected, but my work is abstracted, but energetic. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of color and texture.
Are they acrylic? Or are they oil paintings?
Everything is acrylic. I play around on paper and canvas, and I'm experimenting now with wood and cutting out silhouettes and pulling them kind of off that foundational support. Mm-hmm. I want to put them more in the physical space. So I'm really enjoying that, and I got a good response. Like, the work that we created has been presented at our show that we're doing right now, Presence, and it's really been rewarding to see how people respond to those pieces.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I love the, like, the textural element that you create through not brushes. Like, you don't use brushes very often.
That's something I didn't mention. Yeah.
Yeah.
So series, everything that I'm currently making is through a body work that I call anything but brushes. And it, for me, helps me connect to that spiritual side and be more intuitive. But it also delivers a textural aspect that I don't think I can really physically get from paintbrushes directly. Mm-hmm. So kitchen spatulas, credit cards, little tops and things that I might find and grab. Anything that has an interesting texture, I'll experiment to see how it's going to deliver on the page. And mm-hmm. it's almost like a game of seeing, like, okay, what can I make this do? So it's fun.
I like that. The textural element of your work, even though I've only seen it digitally, is still, like, very present. So I would love to be able to see them in person someday.
The camera doesn't know justice, I can tell you that. It looks great on camera, and then you see it in real life, and you're like,
wow.
Oh, wow, that was not captured.
Yeah, and definitely that idea of essence, because there's so much texture and movement in the work. Like, I really feel like conceptually it seems to make sense and is connecting. It's cool to hear you talk a little bit more about it. Chloe, what about you? Can you tell me what your work looks like and a little bit about some of the materials you use and your process?
Yeah, so I'm a printmaker. I do lots of drawing, but most of my work is based in print. So I start with a screen print, or I start with a lithograph, or I start with an etching, or, you know, whatever I'm working on. I know how to use all printmaking processes, save a few. But I don't print in the traditional sense because I don't make editions. Occasionally I'll make an edition, but I'm a believer in any other aspect of life. If you could do the same thing over and over again, why would you do it the same way twice? Mm-hmm. And so I feel like every print is an opportunity to kind of alter an image in a way that you can't do with anything else. Like, if you do a painting or if you do a drawing and you do it just right, like, it's really hard to replicate that again. Mm-hmm. Versus if I have a printmaking matrix, I can still have this, like, key image or these marks, but I can alter the color, or I can alter the substrate that I printed on. I can print it on wood. I can put it on fabric. I can collage it. And so I really like to exploit that ability with printmaking, which is why very few of my prints are, like, multiples, or direct multiples, I should say. As far as aesthetically, I would say that my work is very illustrative. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's all kind of based on also some of the aesthetic qualities that you can only get through printmaking. Mm-hmm. Like, I really like to utilize transparency through layering to kind of grab your attention and bring it across the entire image versus just the focal point, with, like, different elements that I can incorporate using different techniques. And I really try to push an aesthetic that feels nostalgic. Mm-hmm. I use color, but most of the time I use color that is very muted. I use a lot of analogous kind of color palettes because I want to kind of evoke a sense of familiarity with people who see my work, even if they aren't familiar with the subject matter or the technique. I want them to see something familiar to draw them in and then kind of question the other things that they see that maybe aren't so familiar.
Mm. I like that. And yeah, I hadn't thought about that in your palettes before, but there is a certain like muted quality or a nostalgic like reference there that feel almost like a book or yeah, it's nice to think about them in that context. And you use the figure a lot too. Are they mostly your kids that like we see in your work?
Yeah, it's funny because I've had this conversation with Shashi. I was just having a conversation with someone else, and then we had an artist talk and it came up. I've really been exploring why I only draw people that I know and only people that I know really well. And, you know, before I even had kids, I drew my parents and I drew my siblings and I drew like very close friends, like not the sometimey friends, but the real friends. And then when I had kids, I was discouraged from drawing my kids in college. I had like my oldest son my first year in college and my youngest son my last year in college. And I was discouraged from drawing my kids. Like they would say, oh, this is technically good, but it's a little too cute or whatever. And so they were partially right. Like the way I was executing it, it wasn't as thought-provoking as it could have been. But now that my kids are older and they're always around, I take so many pictures of them that are just kind of like, you know, those candid pictures of kids doing weird and interesting things. It's just like this deep well of image or source imagery that you can use. And now I'm starting to look back at like my mom's old photo albums and drawing people who their faces are familiar, but I didn't quite know who they were because they passed when I was very young, drawing my husband, drawing my in-laws. And so, yeah, I do focus on the figure a lot just because to me personally it's interesting. And again, like everybody can connect with the figure, but I still haven't quite arrived at why, which is something that I want to really be able to articulate both to myself and to people who see my work at some point.
Yeah. It's always nice to have a element of mystery though, you know, because it keeps you searching, right?
Yeah, that's true too. Like if I figure it out, I might get bored.
Yeah.
You're doing abstracts too, right?
And Shashi, when you say that you paint like your ancestors or kind of these historical figures, you're not necessarily pulling from a reference or somebody you know really well, like Chloe, right? So it's kind of this different perspective.
I was thinking that too as she was talking. It was like, it's so interesting that we like each other's work so much and that we're really good friends because it's almost polar opposite. There is no reference. I've never met these people that I believe I pull into my studio space. There's no like direct connection other than what I believe to be this almost spiritual connection. I don't start with anything but a selection of paints. I pour them, let gravity do its thing, and then go along for the ride. It's a real different process. Mine is much more like intuitive, I guess you could say. Her is very processed, and I love that about her stuff. It's almost like the thing that I don't do intrigues me that much more.
That's interesting, yeah. It's I hadn't really thought through, you know, I just wanted both of you on to talk about your friendship and sort of like, you know, your individual careers, but I hadn't really thought about how the conversation about your work would overlap. So it's just kind of fun to hear, to go back and forth and think through some of the different ways that you work and the different outcomes, how there's clearly similarities. You're both thinking about sort of the essence of people, you know, and when you're relating to the figure, but just executing it in a very different way. So it's interesting to think through that. Shashi, you're kind of explaining this magic that you were referencing with Bob Ross, like when you are in your zone and you kind of get in the flow of working with the paint. I was wondering if either of you have like a studio rhythm or a studio ritual practice. Like, do you do anything to like help you get in the flow? Do you light a candle every time? Like, just want to hear you talk about that a little bit.
Me personally, there's a mandate of a couple of things. There's, and my studio mate can attest to this, I must have coffee and I must have Jacob Banks. There's something about the sound of his voice that puts me into a certain meditative state. I don't know, but I play it loud on repeat And it just does a nice connect to the subconscious versus being so keen about what's happening around you. Mm. Once I settle into that, I mean, the room could be full of people. I don't know you. I don't see you.
You're in the zone.
Yes, it's lovely. It feels so good. It just is nice. So
those are that's your formula.
It's a very simple formula, and pick the colors. Like, go in clear with intentions about what colors are going to work in harmony, what's going to fight. Be aware of if they're going to fight, the order of how you apply. And I guess that's something Chloe would think about when she's doing her processes with printing. But I think about it because there's only one shot. I'm not trying to make too many passes. It's supposed to happen very organically. So. Mm. I got to know that orange mixing with that blue over there is not going to give me what I want. I want them next to each other. I don't want them merging and muting. I want them popping off each other. So just thinking about those things in advance. Mm. And then the rest is just way.
So music, coffee, and you kind of set up your palette. But then the rest of it is more of a dance.
Yes, the dance is what you say and is exactly what it is.
Yeah, I like that. What about you, Chloe? Ritual, like what gets you in the flow? How do you kind of set yourself up for a good studio day?
I wish I had a ritual. I kind of have to
carve it out.
Get studio time in when I get it in. Like, I work at my kitchen table. I work in front of the TV. Like, I was drawing last night watching Sherlock, old Sherlock episodes. I would say the only thing that I need is I have to have a clean space, like a clean working surface, because I get distracted by stuff that's shiny. Like, there's dishes in the sink, and then that turns into, well, I should dry the dishes because now the counter looks cluttered. To the dog sees me washing dishes, he's barking. Let me let the dog out. Well, now I got to wait. I got to let the dog in. Like, it turns into this whole thing. So all of that has to be in order. Within reason, like, it doesn't have to be perfect, but I can't have like any glaring tasks that need to be done. Mm-hmm. And then I have to have all of my supplies that I need in front of me, because two things that will ruin my day, like it's a wash, is I can't find something or I have to go to the store to buy something.
That part right there.
Like, so I just talked about wood, and I was trying to do this drawing on wood, and my son, because Sasha's teaching me to stop being so, like, methodical and, like, work harder or smarter, not harder. So I'm like, okay, I'm not going to freehand this drawing. I'm going to project it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one pencil instead of two pencils.
And guess what happened?
That one pencil didn't have an eraser, and my son kicked the projector when I had like 20% left, and it was my last piece of wood, and I went to Home Depot, and I'm like, today is done. It's over. So I don't know about ritual, but organizationally, like, those are the two things that I need, and I should be okay.
I love it. I love it. Yes, that's definitely artist mother truth right there. Do you have a home studio? Or, I mean, you kind of talked about your studio is wherever you need it to be in the moment, but do you have a dedicated studio space, Chloe?
So the room that I'm in, this room is not big. It has to be like a 10 by maybe 12 foot room, houses all of my stuff. But my kids come back here so much, like I'm looking at some Sour Patch Kid wrapper that's like on the desk right now, that I don't feel like it's a conducive working space. Mm-hmm. And so it's great because the organization is here. Like, all my inks are on this shelf and my papers are on this shelf. And I have like a chest of drawers that I use as a mini flat file to organize some papers and prints and things like that. But if I'm at home, I don't like to be isolated. And this is just like some weird patriarchal mother duty thing. I feel like I should not be isolating myself from my family. Mm-hmm. Like, the guilt kicks in.
Yeah.
And so I tend to work with them around me when I'm at home. Mm-hmm. And I know some people need quiet and all of that. I can have, like Sasha said, all kinds of craziness happening around me. As long as I have my stuff, I'm good.
People aren't kicking the projector.
Oh, yeah, except for that. And they've gotten, because my kids are 9 and 15, they are so good. Like, I can count on less than half of one hand, like how many times they've ruined something, mm-hmm. but like that day was not the day.
And Sashi, from the way you were talking, it sounded like you have a studio outside the home.
So here's the thing. I have a whole house and the whole house is an art house. And me and Chloe are studio mates with the the TCP residency for the next 2 years.
Okay. So I didn't realize that.
Studio there. I work in all of it.
Okay.
In all of it, the fire truck. I don't know if you can hear that. The house that I have is 3-bedroom, like regular old split level. So the basement, I allow half of it. The front half of it can be like live-in hangout space. Mm-hmm. So there's like seating, little, very small couch because I deliberately got rid of all the big furniture in my house because I want all of it for me. I'm selfish, really, but I am. And then what would have been, I guess, someone's dining room is my studio up here where I'm sitting at. And I have my lovely table over there. It's huge. It's, you know, my friend Lucy. It's this nice drafting table that I got on Craigslist. No, Facebook Marketplace. Thank you, God. Appreciate you. But it allows me to do some big stuff and spread out and make a good mess because I'm the opposite. I need you to leave me alone. Mm-hmm. I need to stay in my zone. They come in, they look, they stand at the door, like walking in for what? What do you need?
Like that's me.
Like, you see, I'm working. Like, is someone bleeding? What's happening? I'm cooking dinner in 1 hour. I'll feed you, but what do you need now? So we're very, very different, and I love that. Like, I enjoy hearing her stories about her kids being around because my kids never want to be around me. They're both kids. It's all about game life for one of them. The oldest is just like all about his life until it's what do I, like, mom. That only comes up when he needs something.
You said he's 18, right?
Yes, he just turned 18 like 2 weeks ago, and he's got a couple of more months of high school. But meanwhile, it's very different.
Yeah.
And that's fine because my work process requires you to leave me alone. It works.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I would like to make art when I'm around my kids, but I haven't, other than like sketchbook type stuff, I don't have a part of my practice that's really conducive to that. You know, being a painter, it's kind of like I really need to be in my space and I just need to like have my stuff and need you to leave me alone, you know.
Yes.
But I would totally. Like if part of it transferred over. Maybe I need to think about amping up my sketchbook project or process or something because – I don't know. I'm inspired by both of you. Like, I can hear myself in both of the stories. So it's just interesting to think about. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about life as an artist in Atlanta. And just, I want to hear about the community there. And maybe we can tie this into going back to the idea of, like, how you visualized your art career or how you came to art as a career. I don't know if you have both lived in Atlanta your whole life and if that's kind of where you've been known as an artist, but just want to hear a little bit about, you know, how you built up your career and like what parts of the art community in Atlanta have helped with that, or maybe areas where you're like, oh, I wish we had that here. Chloe, why don't you start?
I'm from Atlanta, like went to school in Atlanta, all the way through college in Atlanta. I'm not leaving here. but I would say like I went through an art program, like got the BFA and all of that. And at that time it was really difficult. Like I tried to get an internship, Sashi, you know, Youngblood Gallery. It was like the hip place to be, late 90s, early 2000s. And even though like I been in a couple of shows there, like I could not get the internship. It felt like a very insular type of community. And then I would hear my peers talking about how, you know, they were getting shows. And this is before the internet being as open and accessible as far as art opportunities as it is now. And so in my head, I would be like, how are these people doing these things? I had no idea. I thought that you just like made slides and went to a gallery and showed them your slides and they would give you your time. And I was too much of an introvert to even attempt to do something like that. So like, I briefly worked at a commercial screen printing studio, like so briefly that I think I got one paycheck. Cause I was like, this is not what life is supposed to look like.
Yeah. baseball t-shirts and
Right.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I guess I went to school to do something that I liked, but I'm going to go get a job doing something else. And I like bartended for 10 years and started teaching. And so for me, it just seemed like this inaccessible possibility. And I think this is true anywhere. Like, in order to be seen as an artist, you have to prove yourself. It's like that whole proverbial, well, how am I supposed to get experience if you don't hire me to get experience? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, how do I prove myself if I can't get into the shows or I can't get these opportunities or whatever? And so I went through a period in, I don't know, it was maybe like 5 years ago where I was like deeply depressed with my job. Like, I hated my job. And I'm not like a sad person. And so like on Sunday mornings when I would be awash with this feeling of depression, I was like, something has to change. Like, I can't keep doing this. And I just kind of made a plan and wrote a letter to myself and I just threw it away. And it was like, you are not the person you aspire to be. You are not living the life you aspire to live. Like, from that point, I started making changes to, like, do what I wanted to do. And I knew I wanted to do art. And so I, like, started signing up for workshops at the local printmaking studio. And, like, every opportunity I could find online and on, you know, just through friends. Because even I'm still not big on social media. But at the time, like, I wasn't at all. Like, I didn't even know how Instagram worked. And that, I guess, immersing myself and not being afraid of like the rejection and not thinking that rejection is invalidation and like trying again really helps me to start to be seen as an artist, because people who I knew who they were, but they didn't know who I was. They were certainly interested to know who I was because they were everywhere. Like this one artist I admire, he said, "You're just everywhere." Like,
and you're like, "That's what I want you to think."
Right? Like going to openings and not feeling like I wanted to be friendly and couldn't wait to get out. And like stuff like that, just putting myself out there really helped me, which led to things like residencies and getting to know people who like say, "Hey, would you like to curate this show or whatever?" Like literally just putting myself out there. I can't like create a formula for it because I just like went for it full throttle and kept going for it.
I mean, I feel like the way you're describing it, it doesn't seem that high risk either. Like just showing up and making yourself available. I'm sure there was like, you know, tough feelings. Like maybe you felt like a lot of anxiety or stress if you're not, you know, if you're not an extrovert, but I don't know. I'm inspired by what you're saying because I feel like these are things anybody could do, you know, to just kind of show up and be seen and make yourself known. And, you know, not that it's always easy for everybody, but it's not like, I don't know, you have to take out a second mortgage to do whatever, you know, like, just in terms of, you know, some of those big, like, life risky things that you do, like maybe just building up your career in a way that is, I don't know, a little more step by step, I guess.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where I think there's this illusion, like, and it's kind of perpetuated by social media. Like people, they see the end result, but they don't see what it took to get there, or they don't see that this feed is curated to show you what you, whatever you see doesn't tell 100% of the story. And there's this sense of like, you want something, it has to be immediate. And if it doesn't come quick enough, then it's not going to happen. It's like, okay, I told myself that I was going to quit my job. It took me 2 years to quit that job. I said to myself that I was going to do a residency. I had to apply to that residency twice and be accept the email that says you're an alternate and the feedback that your portfolio is not strong enough, and then say a year later, okay, I have a year to build my portfolio and then I'm going to get it this time. So it's like just being patient and not falling victim to this sense that like everything's going to happen right when you want it and just wait for it to happen. But you got to keep trying in the meantime.
Chills. Preach. Like that was good. Sashi, what do you want to say to that?
Facts have been said here, will maybe repeat it again, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So
Tell me about your story.
I have been an art teacher for 22 years. That is the only job I had straight out of college. I was very clear that I needed a job that I could do for 30 years or so. Paycheck, consistent. And I achieve that. Like, I enjoy my work. I mean, I do. But there's never, up until maybe like 7 or 8 years ago, even a consideration of, oh, what you do here can translate into a whole different realm or avenue of not just work, but a lifestyle and friendships and this network and community. That was like so far removed from anything that I had been exposed to or considered. But here's the thing, I got divorced. It was not a good thing as far as being married, and it was a very wonderful thing to be divorced, but it became this open question of, okay, you got your life back. You have the keys to drive your own bus wherever you want to go. Where do you want to be? Who do you want to see? You got options. You can do whatever you want. You're bright. What do you want? And I also had a couple of friends, Fran Sinclair, Marlon, and my sister saying, well, you got this stuff you do, like you do this artwork and stuff. It's under the bed. Like, Ben's never going to give you any money. Shade, no shade, whatever. The only thing that you really can probably try to parlay or play around with a little bit is maybe try to sell the art. People will give you $50 for that or $100 for that. And at the time, even that was like, really? It was just not a thing that connected with my exposure and experience. Meanwhile, I was like, okay, so if I'm going to do this, I don't know any people in the art world. I don't know any artists. I don't know anybody. All I know are teachers, because that's all I've ever done. And I've been momming it up over here with these two kids and trying to make this whole marriage lifestyle, which is very narrowing for some people. I'll just say for some, as my experience was my own. Meanwhile, now I have to figure out what to do. And I'm a researcher. I like to read. So I got on Google and I was like, okay, what do you have here? And I found a couple of little Google meetups and check this out, check that out. Apache Cafe was still in existence and had lots.
Yes.
Apache Cafe is like this place. They would have live drawing and live music.
Oh, cool.
And I would go do that and, you know, just try to get the wheels moving again, because I wasn't doing anything but the teaching part of it, not the working part. And so fast forward, you know, you see certain people and you have conversations. And like Chloe said, you start to make these small connections that make a bigger network down the line. I got to meet Dan Flores, Artist King. Shout out to Dan, because Dan is the man. Dan knows everybody. And meeting up with Dan and meeting his little community of people that would meet up with him gave me friendships with people who were artists. And those artists would tell me things and share. We would have these conversations about our aspirations. And you slowly start to build that art community and connect with the people in the city that you didn't even know were right there around you looking for this connection. So for me, I believe 100% community is king above it all. Because if you can do the work, sure, it lived under my bed. That's fine. It's nice. And I had no idea, again, like social media, like Facebook. Who's got time for that? So and meeting these people online, it was like, oh, that's why you get online. This is why you, oh, they have workshops that you can see how to go to. So I started to realize the value in the internet for that purpose. And again, it's all about connecting in as many ways. It's almost like a circuit board. If you have enough connections, there's enough power and process and skill to build out way faster than you could with that one chip. So the more connections and more networks I make, the stronger the processing of my art development can be. So that's a roundabout way of saying, you know, find your tribe. I love Chloe. I love the tribe that I found. And it all started with realizing, like, this is not living. This is not who I want to live as. There's something bigger here for me. There's a more purpose. And now, what are you going to do about it? And it takes time. It mm-hmm. takes more time than you might want to give to it, but persistence, perseverance, prayer, a little push, mm-hmm. pull it all together and smile, because I look around at the people I know and the things that I've done. I met Michelle Obama because of art. Mm-hmm.
And what did she do with your Michelle painting? What did she do? You got to say it.
She signed my painting. Oh. It's hanging in the kitchen. Talking about it. That's in the family vault right now.
I was just listening to a podcast and somebody was talking about how their highlight of their year was they met Michelle Obama, and the picture, because of course you got to take a picture with her, was their Christmas card. And she was like, ooh, I'm never having another Christmas card in my life. I'm probably never meet her again, but it's going to be the same Christmas card, me and Michelle Obama. Because how can you beat that?
I look at art as the keys to accessing this whole, not just, ooh, I do the work, but I meet the people. Mm-hmm. I go on this journey. I have gone places. Who would have shown up to Paris, Tennessee? I wouldn't have, not in the school teacher. I'm somebody's wife sitting over here trying to make this pot roast. Why? I don't even want it. Meanwhile, art takes you places and lets you experience things that are far beyond your regular, ordinary script. So
I love both of you. I love so many things, but what you just said, Sashi, kind of reminded me of this quote by Helen O'Leary, who was on the podcast with Barbara Campbell Thomas a couple episodes ago. But she said something that just like hit me. She was like, every good thing in my life has come from painting. And I just had never thought of it in that way before, you know. And I think it takes that moment of that both of you explained and expressed about, like, realizing that you're not doing what you want with your life and that you don't have to do these extravagant things. You can just take small steps and build it up and build it up and build it up. And then suddenly you realize that it just, like, grows and becomes this, like, thing, and you realize that you're living a life that you love and enjoy. And I don't know. It's just, like, so encouraging to hear both of you share about your journeys and, you know, just taking pride in your careers and feeling like, yeah, you have to be patient and it's not, you know, going to be this like magical thing, but it still is your own, right? It's like your own path. And
the whole journey was grand mm-hmm. so far. Like the whole experience of getting even to here. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not stopping here. No, I've not arrived. Meanwhile, I have a network of friends that old Sashi, 8 years ago, Sashi, Who are these people? Mm-hmm. I admire them. I look to them and admire their work. I don't know them. Mm-hmm. Now I can just be like, hey, Delita, how's it going? What's up? What are you doing now? Chloe, what are you doing? Like, I was a fan of the hapless printmaker before I knew the hapless mm-hmm. printmaker. But because of our residency together, that's like my friend. Like, girl, mm-hmm. what are you doing?
I love that.
Doctors.
So do both of you feel like now, you know, there's a lot of opportunities in Atlanta, places for you to show, like, just kind of talk to me a little bit about how your career is kind of blooming now in Atlanta. You've talked about kind of how you built it up with, like, finding community, but, like, what are some things you're looking forward to being where you are now and where it's going to take you in the future?
Future is so open, Chloe.
You want to start?
I knew you were going to do that. So to be quite frank, because that's all I know how to be, it's a real open door. Like, there's plenty to walk through. I don't know. Right now, it's open. We don't know. Mm-hmm. COVID is such a weird place to be as an artist because
it is.
You really don't know what the next move really is. I'm grateful to our residency program with TCP. I mean, that gives us some almost like landing spot or foundation that we can count on for some type of, you know, execution. Like, we're doing this show right now that ends at the end of the month, Presence. And without that, I can't say that I know directly that I would have had something going on in Atlanta right now. Mm-hmm. Maybe something virtually online somewhere, but it's a weird space to be in right now. Mm-hmm. I can't say I have a clear answer of what 2021 is going to do or what our next thing Atlanta has to offer. Mm-hmm. All I can say is we do the work. Mm-hmm. We listen to the work and, you know.
Yeah, it just seems like there's such a vibrant art community there that, I don't know, as an outsider who doesn't live there, it just looks like there's a lot to plug into, which I would think would feel good.
Yeah, I would say it feels good. Like, I don't know. Sashi and I have had this conversation. It's like, what is the stuff that we're not going to do anymore? Mm-hmm. Not because it's not valuable anymore, but like, how can we expand mm-hmm. our network in Atlanta mm-hmm. and not constantly rely on like the sure thing to like mm-hmm. push yourself outside of the network you already have. And I can say in COVID, and I had a conversation with another Atlanta artist, Whitney Stansel. I ran into her in a coffee shop and we were talking about how we were getting more opportunities during COVID than like ever, because the Atlanta arts community was so supportive and recognized that like places were closing their doors and galleries weren't able to have openings and have shows in the pandemic. And like the organizations that wanted to support artists by doing anything, by offering a grant or by having some kind of socially distanced art exhibition opportunities, like our residency hosted a drive-through exhibition where there were, I think, something like 2,800 attendees approximately. And so like the community here is, I can't say is very rich and is very vibrant. And because I can compare it to what it was like, say maybe 15 years ago, I would say it is opening up some to be more accepting of the artists that are here and the artists that are coming here. Mm-hmm. So I would say like, as far as just a metropolitan area, Atlanta is very welcoming to the arts, and there are more kind of areas outside of Atlanta proper, I guess, that are starting to recognize the power and the economic value of the arts. And I would attribute that to the movie industry because of the people who are coming here, who have never been here, who possibly never would have been here before, but are here because of the movie industry. And like, you know, the only thing that matters is dollars. And because money is, I mean, the movie industry falls under that umbrella of the arts for the first time ever. They are starting to actually count the economic impact that the arts are having on the state of Georgia. Mm-hmm. And so that, like, all of these other cities are trying to grab ones like, well, what can we do? And so Atlanta for sure, Fulton County for sure support the arts. Yeah. But I think that is something that is growing and can possibly benefit like the greater arts community within the state.
I love that. I like what you said too about how it seems like during COVID, you know, the opportunities for artists expanded. And I feel like so much of that too is just the ingenuity of artists to create their own opportunities mm-hmm. and to like offer opportunities to others. Like, you know, you hear this like romanticized talk about how artists are the culture producers and we're the, you know, we're the ones like putting it all out there. But I think when you do have a crisis and it seems like artists are doing okay and we are creating opportunities, it's like you really kind of see like, oh yeah, like that's true, you know, like yep. we do know how to adapt. And I don't know, I just feel like I feel like that language that we, or those things that we say about artists, it's like become more visible to me in the pandemic, because not every artist, of course, I know lots of artists are struggling right now. And, you know, there are a lot of people that don't feel like there's a lot of opportunities, but I've been encouraged just to see how I feel like we're living up to our reputation, I guess, right now.
Right. For sure.
I'm delighted to share that this episode of the Artist Mother podcast is sponsored by an artist mother and tax expert, Hannah Cole of Sunlight Tax. Is your creative practice gaining steam? Maybe you just got a big grant or a big show. You're excited to get to work, but a nagging feeling tells you that there are some tax issues that could hurt you. What you don't know might actually be holding you back from all that you can accomplish. You just want to get down to the studio and do the work you love, but finances and tax concerns are dragging you down. Thankfully, Sunlight Tax is here for you. Artist and tax pro Hannah Cole started Sunlight Tax to empower creative people with the tax and money tools you need so you can have more money, more time, and make a bigger impact with your work. Who doesn't want that? Sunlight Tax offers an annual membership called Money Bootcamp, which is tailored to your busy creative life to teach you targeted skills for your financial health and taxes. Hannah guides you through the pitfalls into simple systems so you can stay on track, start investing in yourself, and get back to the studio without getting bogged down. Right now, listeners of the Artist Mother podcast can get a free artist tax deduction guide by going to sunlighttax.com/artistmother. That's sunlighttax.com/artistmother. Thank you, Hannah, for providing so much to artists and helping us through with all of our financial concerns. It's so reassuring to have experts like you we can trust and we know are looking out for us. Head to sunlighttax.com to find out more about everything Hannah has to offer, and don't forget your free artist tax deduction guide just for our community at sunlighttax.com/artistmother. So let's talk a little bit about your residency experience. You both went to Stay Home Gallery in Paris, Tennessee, which is my former home that we turned into an art gallery and residency program, which is still like crazy, and just crazy that amazing artists like you, who I admire, like went there. And like, it's just like, what? It just is very humbling, and you know, to even be able to say that. And so I'm just like so grateful that like you all were able to utilize the space. But I just wanted to hear a little bit about like, how did you decide to plan a residency together? How did you decide that you wanted to go on a residency? And it's not so much that I want you to talk about Stay Home Gallery, but just, you know, just this idea of like doing a residency together. How did you know it was the right time? And you know, that it was something that you wanted to bring a friend with rather than like go alone. And you brought all of your kids or some of your kids?
Just only one of mine came, the smaller one, okay. The 11-year-old.
So the 18-year-old, he was off on his own doing his thing. Nope. But Chloe, both of your boys came, right?
Yeah, they both came.
Okay. So you had three boys and the two of you.
Yeah. It was fine.
Yeah.
I invited Sashi. So roundabout story, I'm going to make it really short.
Yeah.
My husband and I went out of town in Florida like in June when it first seemed like it was okay to still go out of town. And we got a beach house and we were only supposed to stay for 4 days. And I convinced him. I was like, this is so much fun. And so me and the other couple convinced my husband to stay the whole week. Which exhausted his PTO. And so when I brought up like going on this residency, I was like, it's on a farm and it's beautiful and it's isolated and it's safe. He was like, remember when I told you if I stay for the rest of the week? I was like, oh yeah, you're right. So I was like, well, I don't want to go with just the kids because then it's going to defeat the purpose. They're going to be harassing me the whole time.
Right.
Right.
And so me and Sasha get along great. We're already studio mates. And so I just texted her. I was like, hey, you want to do this? And I like airplane. We call it airplane on Instagram. And she's like, yeah. Sure, you set it up.
I like your style.
Yeah.
A planner. I'm terrible.
I was like, I'll send you the paperwork. I'll like take care of all the financial stuff. You can just pay me back. And I was interested in it because, like you said, the way people are creating opportunities, like I had been watching the evolution of it being like it started as like a virtual show, right?
Yeah. When lockdown happened, Pam and I, who, you know, again, just talking about networking and like small connections building into bigger things. Like we had been curated into a 2-person show in February and like we just really hit it off. And, you know, we were like, oh, it would be so fun to work on a project together sometime. Like maybe we could curate or something. And then in the lockdown happened, like the U.S. going into extreme lockdown in early March. And we were like, oh, this is our chance. Like, we should do a virtual like response to this, you know? And so we ended up doing 12 weeks of, we produced a virtual show each week for 12 weeks, kind of responding to the pandemic. Like, we picked themes, you know, like anxiety and stress and isolation and like themes that kind of went along with it. And, you know, eventually, I'm trying to make a long story short too. After we had kind of got that going, it was around that time that my husband and I were talking about moving. And, you know, so I was like, maybe we could try to somehow like keep this place and see if it'll work as a residency and gallery. And then, you know, we already have this project that we're doing. So like maybe it could kind of be stay home gallery, I guess. Like I kind of like pitched it to Pam and she was like, what? Like that would be amazing. And I'm like, well, I don't know if it'll work, but like we can try. And so yeah, it started really in response to COVID. Like I haven't really thought about it in that way, but you know, just going back to that idea of responding to something in a crisis and trying to make the best out of it. I guess we did that in a way, but also like a lot of luck and privilege. And, you know, I know there's more to the story. But yeah, just, you know, it's just crazy that it just kind of became this thing and it's still there. It's still trucking.
Yeah. Well, I was watching and I guess I wanted to support it because, for the past 2 years, I've done like back-to-back fellowships and residencies. I guess it's like I need something to keep me engaged and motivated and pushing myself. And I really admired what you guys did because I look a lot at the parent residency, the so-called parent residencies, which they are not parent residencies. Mm-mm. It's like
you, a dorm room.
Right. It's like, don't bring your kids. This is a 6-month residency and you can't bring your kids. Mm-hmm. It's like, who can leave their kids? Mm-mm. Or it's like they give you a stipend and it's $600 for an entire month. So you have to take time off of your job and then they're going to pay you $600. Or like they don't pay for anything. And I'm like, whoever is creating this program, they're just like saying it's for parent to check some box so they can get some kind of like, I don't know, federal kickback or whatever, but this is not like a very small percentage, a very small privileged percentage of mothers or parents could take advantage of this opportunity who is probably a man and not a mother at all, who leaves his kids with his wife or whoever to raise them while they go do this residency. And so I wanted to support it because I wanted a residency that actually like the time length is reasonable. You can bring your entire family. I wanted to support that because that is what these other residencies should be doing. Mm. And hopefully they're out there taking notes.
Right. Listen in. Well, that's really flattering, Chloe. Yeah, I think I've had the same experience as you in that it's like you see these things that are called artist parent residencies, but like even one that I'm not going to say the name, but I really admire this program and I think they are supportive to artist mothers and they do a lot. But, you know, it says like in there, after you kind of go through your application and you're reading, it's like you are provided one dorm room with one bed. It's up to you to figure out how, you know, if probably like you're supposed to bring your kids, but there's not actually a facility to support you bringing your kids. So it's like, I don't know, just... Yeah, it just seems like there's just something missing there. Yeah. And not every residency is the same, you know? Like, I know I'm obviously, like, happy to be transparent that we don't give stipends. We, like, you have to pay to come to our residency, you know? So, like, I know there's some residencies that they are able to give you stipends and, you know, maybe that means that you only get a dorm room. And so I think there's a give and take, like all programming is different, but yeah, it's just don't say you're for parents if you don't even have space for the kid to sleep.
Right.
Sorry, kids.
So how did you structure your time there? And like, what did you kind of talk about going in with regards to like your plan? Did you collaborate or did you kind of just like swap the studio time? Sashi, could you share a little bit about that?
I don't know. It kind of worked out because I had to do some things that I call handwork, small stuff. I was having to do some drawings for a job that I was needing to finish up for Georgia Audubon. So I needed to do that first, not to set at the table, drawing that stuff out. Meanwhile, Chloe's out there churning out little birds and circles and doing this whole magnificent, like, technical stuff with the printmaking. And so I go out there just to look like, ooh, I'm learning things, you know? Mm-hmm. I really had not, up till I met her, really had a clear understanding of printmaking and silk screening or any of it. So that's really one of the great benefits of being a studio mate with her, is learning this process and getting intrigued about, okay, cool, can I figure that out? Oh, I could try that. Mm-hmm. But by the time she was done with that, it was like, okay, swap out. Because she had to work on her wood drawing, and I had to work on these wood cuts. So by the time she was, you know, ready to slide and glide over to her different side of project, I ended up being able to just come in. And then I get up really early. I'm like, okay, if I'm up, I'm up. Let me make my coffee. Mm-hmm. Let me get my headphones. Let me go. Mm-hmm. I'm out. Let's make use of this time because everybody's asleep. Kids are not doing anything. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to be in Chloe's way making a bunch of noise with my saw. So,
well, that's nice. It sounds like you guys kind of had this rhythm and you worked a little bit in the house and then in the studio and kind of swapped in and out. And I'm assuming your boys got along well and that all worked out. And they had a week off school, so it was kind of more like a vacation week for them.
Yeah, this was right at the end of Christmas break. So yeah, it just fit in with the schedule. By the time we came back, I think we had like 3 or 4 days before school came back in session. So it worked out for everybody. They got to like run amok and burn wood. They had a ball with the fire pit. Like,
oh, good.
Like, the absolute family highlight was, yeah, the fire pit, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I own a fire pit. Here's the thing. I own the exact same fire pit. Have never, ever, 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 ever used it. It sat in my yard for like maybe, I think as he said, maybe 7 years, 8 years. And we put it together. We brought it and we used it. Mm. And it was so nice for his birthday like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is our new thing now.
Yeah, I love that.
I know how to put the fire together. So I was like, ooh, Adonis, you're like.
Oh, he's a complete pyro, my son. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. And, you know, different location kind of gives you like a different perspective. And there's definitely things that I do on vacation that I'm like, I could do this at home, but it just feels different, you know?
Yeah. It was really nice.
That's great. Okay, one or two more questions and then we'll wrap up. So just, you know, wanting to hear a little bit more about what's next for you, like maybe some art career goals that you're working on within the next like 6 months or year. Like, what are some things that you're kind of like, you're getting there, you're making those small steps, you kind of can see them in the distance, but you know, there's still things that you're working on. Sashi, you can start.
Sure. So I really, really like the woodcuts that I'm doing, those silhouettes that pull those abstract figures out off the surface. So my goal is to create more of them and fill up a space, almost like creating this ritualistic emergence of all of them coming from my so-called in-between space. Mm-hmm. So a room where it's an installation where you can feel like you're meeting and immersing yourself in that spiritual plane. Mm. So I'm going to write up something, kind of shop it around to see where I can take that and develop that body of work a little bit broader so I have the pieces ready when I know someone says yes. Mm-hmm. And then my other thing is I'm really trying to take this other, I did a solo show for Fulton County here in Atlanta, Georgia. And now with that body being like finished as far as the show, I want to try to shop the proposal for it around and find other avenues to present it, preferably out of state, because that's my preference, being able to stretch away from the state of Georgia, but shopping around to a couple of galleries and institutions. There's a couple of applications that I need to finish filling out, so to speak, and see if I can get a yes. And if not, you know,
yeah,
keep working until I do. So yeah, that's it. Yeah.
That's exciting. Chloe, what about you?
I just want to tell Sasha, she is neglecting to say the show that we're in, she built a whole altar.
Oh, awesome.
Surrounded by her silhouette ancestor cutouts. So she's already on the right track. I just had to let everybody know that.
Awesome. Thank you. Got to brag on your friend.
Yeah, I like the depth that I got so far, and I want to make it bigger and expand it out. So it seemed like as a trial run, mm-hmm. I really like the effect, and I just need to expand that and put it in a bigger place, bigger mm-hmm. space. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Brent.
You're welcome. I need to catch up. I would like to have a solo show. In my past life, I used to be a fake photographer, and I've had like solo shows doing that. But I don't count those. And so I'm doing the same thing. We're actually tag teaming, like, let's apply for this, let's apply for that, mm-hmm. For a solo exhibition. And then whether I get funding for it or not, I'm going to make the work and then continue mm-hmm. on my,
yep.
my path to find a place to have the solo show. And then I am also looking into like ways to delve more into materiality to kind of push the limits of printmaking and like my aesthetic, mm-hmm. working on making things more immersive or installation based or three dimensional. And then I recently got an idea when someone said, you should look into animation. Like I could see your work being mm-hmm. animated, even if it's just something short, to see how you like it. And so that really piqued my interest. So I'm going to look into that too, maybe with some existing work to mm-hmm. see how I could kind of step into that realm.
Yeah, that's great. I love that you kind of talk like your accountability buddies maybe or something, like sharing opportunities and, you know, applying for things together. And I love that comment, Chloe, about whether I get it or not, I'm going to make the work. Like, mm-hmm. so important. Okay, and then what about something you're thinking about or working towards with motherhood? We haven't talked too much about motherhood, but just interested to hear you share a little bit more about where you're at right now and something that you're thinking about, Chloe.
Motherhood, one thing that is really bothering me lately, my kids are not going back to school right now, mm-hmm. which they don't want to go back. My youngest wants to go to school just for PE, and then mm-hmm. he wants to come back home.
You're like the one time where you would be most interacting yeah. without a mask and everything.
Right. Like just pee and then come get me. But it really bothers me because like I have always been a believer that excessive screen time is detrimental. And now it's like I can't escape it. Mm-hmm. And I could not homeschool my kids. I really admire people that can do that. Mm-hmm. I still work a full-time job. And my kids, like, they just don't listen to me with the same kind of weight that they listen to someone else because mm-hmm. we don't have those norms established. And so I'm really focused. I've always done this, but I'm even more focused on any spare time that we have. Like, I get them out of the house so that they can't fall back on, let me hop on a screen and do mm-hmm. something. Because before I had no issue with my kids like watching lots of TV because that was really the only kind of digital activity that they yeah. engaged in. But now it's just like everything. You've literally been on a screen 12 hours today. But 8 hours of that was like stuff that you had to do. Mm-hmm. And so that's like something that I'm struggling with and hoping that it doesn't create like a complete shift in who they are as people and mm-hmm. their habits as they get older.
Yeah.
Because them engaging in real life has always been really important to me.
I've been thinking about that a lot too, especially because we moved from Tennessee to Indiana and just with the weather, it's like I'm not like a crafty, let me get on the floor, play type mom. I'm more like, let's go to the park. Let's go to the coffee shop. I'll take them out and do stuff. Like I like to be active with them. And I'm just like the past couple of weeks, it's been really cold here, like not even getting above freezing. And I can do winter if it's like 40, but mm-hmm. if it's like 25, mm-hmm. I'm like mm-hmm. just miserable. Like, so I feel you. Like I'm like, you already are getting more screen time than you need to. And now that winter's here, I'm just like, ugh. So I need to think through that, some of that too, and work on some things. Sashi, what about you?
I will say Chloe has made me much more conscious of that. Mm-hmm. Just in hearing her talk. Mm-hmm. And I don't get guilt feeling, but I get more like, get out of the house. I don't personally want to get them out the house because that's just not me. Yeah. I'm more so like, okay, you've been sitting in that chair for this many hours. Mm-hmm. Get off the chair. Mm-hmm. And I get pushback, and this is only to the 11-year-old. The 18-year-old runs his own little adventure. Yeah. It's not. I'm not a parent anymore. I'm low-key trying to learn how to, like, not say anything. Mm-hmm.
Cohabitate.
No. No. That would not be my pleasure. He does not pay any bills.
That's true.
We can come to cohabitate. Usually for me implies that there's like a correlation.
Like an exchange.
Yeah. And balances. But yeah, with the little one, I just realized, again, Chloe and her, gotta love a friend. And the almost like reflection of differences in life. Mm-hmm. And I say to Amir, like, dude, you've been sitting in this chair. And I know you're like wanting to do your thing. His thing is Minecraft. He loves mm-hmm. Minecraft. Her kid does too. It's like I'm way more noticing here. Like, you haven't moved. Mm-hmm. So don't come back for, like, I'm old school. Don't come back for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. The street lights, come on.
right. Is it getting dark? And he accepts that. He'll mm-hmm. go out and he'll just run around the block. Mm-hmm. He'll do laps. And he said he walked from this part of the neighborhood and back. So he's kind of old school in that too, because he doesn't mind just wandering around. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He has his phone and he'll have that in his pocket or whatever. But it's more so like, I need to get you off of this stationary lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in going anywhere with you because personally, I'm all like, I don't want to go anywhere. The grocery store and the studio. That's yep. like my life. Because it's, you know, I'm always like, oh, pandemic.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure many, many moms listening can relate to that. Just the screen time and the limits and the not knowing what to do with our kids right now because everything is, you know, shut down or we're not supposed to be with people or all that. So anyway, I hear you. Hopefully it changes soon, right? Mm. All right. Final five questions to wrap up the interview. We'll have Chloe go first with these answers and then Sashi, you can answer. So Chloe, who's your biggest art crush?
I have so many people, but I can say one person who I've been looking at online a lot is, Sashi knows him, Tylon Sawyer.
Mm. Oh, he's a sweetheart. Yes, Tylon is bomb. Yes. He's
yes. Really nice. I really love his work.
Sashi, what about you? Who's your biggest art crush?
So I'm over here looking at, what is his name? Steve Prince. He's a printmaker. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, the more Chloe's work is around me and my eyesight starts tuning into the crispiness that is printmaking. I'm fascinated by people that can do it on a large scale because I think large. So I know the physicality of it's a whole, like you say, dance to work at that scale. And mm-hmm. I did it. You're doing this. And it's so well done. There are so many well thought out stories and execution. I just really love his work right now. Mm. I'm sure a whole bunch of other people, but I'm terrible with names. I'm just like a fifth.
That's all right. Just need one.
Yeah.
All right. Chloe, what's your favorite place to travel or a dream trip that you'd like to go on post-COVID?
I used to travel a lot. Actually, me and Sasha were having this conversation today. And I was like, the whole world is literally like the same, but people speak different languages and have different values. Mm. And so, yeah, what is my favorite place that I've been? probably Iceland was my favorite place back then. It was just like so quiet and so like ridiculously beautiful. Like just driving, we would be driving to a place and then I would pull over to like take pictures of stuff, but like multiple times, like dozens of times on one trip, because there's just like a massive waterfall or this looks like Dragonstone from Game of Thrones, like literally. And everyone's just so nice and friendly and everything is just so clean. And yeah, that's my favorite place I've been.
Sashi, what about you?
So I gotta say Morocco, but that was so long ago, but it stands out because it had everything that I'm already low-key obsessed with. It has color. It has texture. Like, what house paint? What is this foreign word, house paint? Every wall that I remember was literally tiles of these intricate mosaics. And it's like, this is the bathroom? Really? This is how you all get down here? This is the floor? Like, it was everywhere. So it just, even like, I went right after college on study abroad. And to this day, I can clearly envision like the stunning everyday items, like the artistic value that was placed for me. It looked like artistic value for them. It's just like mundane.
Yep.
This is how we do our walls.
I hope I get to go there someday. It's like
fantastic.
It's on my list too.
Just the colors, like just.
But it's a contrast though, because the landscape is so brown. Like I got sad, and like it's Atlanta. We live in what apparently is a forest. I didn't realize it. Everybody doesn't have green trees everywhere, but the landscape of Morocco is so barren and tan. There's just no other word I can use. Tan. Everywhere tan.
Yeah.
So almost like they compensated.
Yeah.
To make everything such rich colors and textures to just help the eye out.
Yeah. So, well, you got to get out of the sand anyway, so you might as well stay inside the pretty tiled rooms, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What film or book or maybe a recent show or something has inspired you greatly or just recently? Chloe?
Inspired me. I watch a lot of like cerebral things. So I wouldn't say that the things I watch are inspiring necessarily. They are purely for entertainment. I will say a show that I really love because of the complexity of the characters is Peaky Blinders. Like, so many people do not know what this show is.
You're not even saying we have to keep it PG.
Yes, but it is like such a good show, and every single character has so much depth and complexity. And like, it deals with issues. Like, it takes place in the 20s in Birmingham in the UK, but like, some of it deals with like race, and it deals with like women's issues and women struggling for equality and power. It's just such a good show.
You just have to get through the language. Like, it took me like a few episodes. Like, I was like, what are they saying? Like, I couldn't.
Oh, you can't understand.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Cillian Murphy will make you figure it out, too. So that helps. He's real easy on eyes.
Just keep staring until you do.
Sashi, what about you? A favorite film or book or show that's inspired you?
So I am a Octavia Butler disciple. I am all things that she has ever written, produced short stories. I found like little things that were in science magazines when she was doing like really getting started publications. And literally everything she's written has informed how I look at the world, from patterns to people to being in an and accepting that there at some point is going to be some level of apocalyptic development and you need to be ready for it. That looks like can change and shift based on your view, but being prepared makes you more prone to survival. Like, there's just so many messages that I read her really young. I think I was like 11 or 12 when I started reading Octavia Butler.
Wow.
It didn't creep me out. It made me be like, well, I was already a paranoid child, but it helped me understand why I should be paranoid. Like, mm-hmm. there is no rainbows and butterflies. You need to pay attention to the reality of what race is, mm-hmm. what social structure could be, and that there are monsters. Mm-hmm. Like, she was very clear, but not clear. And if you were, like, looking for the signs, the Easter eggs, it was like, as life developed, I look back on those books and I see all these signals that have helped guide me through some troubles or questionable situations. So Octavia Butler, hands down, if you have never read Where You Were.
What book would you recommend the most? I know.
Depending on what mood you're in. But start with Pattern Master.
Parable of the Sower is Octavia Butler, right?
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
I think that's probably the most well-read, most popular. That's the only one I've read by her, but...
all worth looking at, all worth their own.
All of them. She recommends all of them.
All of them. I can't stress that enough. They're interconnected in a lot of ways. And if you look at the world through rose-colored glasses after this stuff that has happened,
you can't.
She will remind you that mm-hmm. it can get much worse if we do not do our part.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Takes all of us.
Yes.
Okay, Chloe, what's your favorite meal?
Oh, I love tacos. Mm. Yeah. Tacos, El Pastor, asada tacos. And I like the real tacos. People say that you can't get real tacos in Atlanta. That is a lie. You can. So I like the soft corn tortillas with cilantro and onion and avocado salsa and a little bit of lime. That is my favorite meal.
Sashi, what about you? Favorite meal?
Okay, I'm a ride in a different direction, but it's still all ethnic. I am a jerk chicken and an oxtail plate large with a whole side of plantains. Just sit me down with that, and I'm going to take my time, but it's all going to be gone. Or if I'm in a shifty, different mood, it's going to be a Mandingo wrap from Tassili's. They are a vegan place that makes these ridiculously huge, delicious kale wraps that are, oh my God.
So good.
That's all I'll say.
Mm.
Delicious.
Y'all are making me hungry. Okay, last but not least, just want to offer you the space to give a shout out to somebody in your community or in your personal life who you want to thank for supporting you and your work, Chloe.
There are so many people.
It's okay. You can't hit them all. You can't hit
I know. All. I'm not going to read a list, but there are some people who are constantly showing up for me. Like to show Dewey and Douglas, every show I have, they show up and they're going to take a video and they're going to post it and they're going to praise me. Like, no matter what, it's crazy. And then like Misty Lackey, and then people who offer just to help me with things, like unsolicited almost. There are so many people, but like anybody who has offered to help or has offered me kind words, I think that we take that for granted so much, but it seems like those moments come right when you need them. And I have to thank our residency director, Netta Akbari. She's just like a fantastic, wonderful person who is also a great advocate for the artist she works with.
Mm. Okay, Sashi, what about you?
I got to back up Netta. Netta is literally one of those people who you dream you knew.
Mm.
And somehow she supports me and my friends. So she's just a wonderful person as far as support, network. Like, believing in what you do is such a powerful thing in this type of work, especially as a woman, because you don't necessarily get that automatically versus, you know, the male species. Meanwhile, I can't help but say my entire art church, y'all know who y'all are.
The Church of Art, yes.
We all attend, especially on Sundays. I can't thank them enough for all the support, the advice, the Lisa Toki, Dia, oh my God, the Queen of Critique on the side. But they're just a good crew of people. And that goes back to my belief that you got to have a network, your community. Everything.
I love it. And I love, you know, that you all are connected, you have this friendship, but also that you've just shared so much about how you have this wider community that you're both a part of and plugging into. And yeah, just really enriching conversation today. Thank you both so much. This was wonderful.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.